Welcome to Season 4 of the Farming Together podcast. This season, Pippa Jones is chatting with farmers who are putting science-backed information into practice, testing ways to reduce emissions and strengthening their farm businesses. Across 6 episodes, you'll hear from farmers who are trying out research-informed tools, ideas and technologies. We delve into what sparked each journey, what's been challenging, what's paid off, and what farmers would do differently next time. Together, these stories show how research is driving real-world change across Australian agriculture and horticulture. This season is brought to you by the Land and Primary Industries Network of the New South Wales Decarbonisation Innovation Hub. So whether you're already trialling new ideas, curious about what's possible in your own operation, or just keen to hear how other farmers are approaching decarbonisation, this season's for you. To learn more about the Hub's activities and resources, go to www.decarbhub.au or contact us about getting involved in future research via email, communications@decarbhub.au.
Hello, you're listening to the Farming Together Season 4 podcast series. My name is Pippa Jones. I'm your host for the podcast, as well as an extension officer, a farmer, and an Uffield scholar. This episode is called Diesel to Decarbonisation. And in this conversation, we chat with Karen Stark, who shares her journey into farming and the practical lessons that came with trialling renewable energy on a large mixed farm. From early solar pumping workshops to a complex solar diesel irrigation project, the conversation explores what it really takes to make on-farm energy transition work. Karen's experience provides strong practical evidence, plus she's considered the payback time of her investments and what they can realistically expect in terms of emissions reductions once the system is fully up and running. It's an insightful look at the opportunities, challenges and growing momentum behind farms becoming producers, not just of food and fibre, but also of energy and carbon outcomes. Thank you to Karen Stark, who reminds us that decarbonisation isn't just about new technology, it's about persistence, connecting with others, and leading the way in shaping a more resilient future in agriculture. Hi, good morning, Karen Stark. So thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Pip.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm sitting at home, which is in sunny Gundawindi, but I believe where you are, it's a little chillier down in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm in the Blue Mountains for the school term and we go back to our farm as much as we can on school holidays, but it's a lot warmer than it is here.
Yeah, definitely. I'm interested. So you split your time, I guess, between the farm and the Blue Mountains. What could you tell me, I guess, about yourself and your background in particular around the farming side of things?
Sure. So I knew nothing about agriculture and farming prior to meeting my partner or my late partner, John. He grew up on a farm, a cotton, wheat, barley farm in Narromine in the central west of New South Wales. So it was really a massive learning curve for me to be suddenly living on a farm after growing up in Perth and working and living in the UK with John for about 5 years. We moved in about 2011 to the farm, 2,500 hectares in Narromine. And really, you know, it was such an eye-opening experience to learn about farmers, to learn about where your food and fibre comes from, about how hard they work, how, you know, they have to be so resilient because of all the external pressures that are coming on them. But my background's really in environmental science and sustainable development. So working a lot of my career in government on community-based social marketing programs to try and improve environmental outcomes, really. So when I moved to the farm in the Central West, I worked in a few different regional roles, and some of them were on renewables, some of them were on waste. And that's really what picked my interest, I suppose, in how we could use renewables on our farm to reduce diesel use in particular.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm intrigued. Do you think that having the experience of living on farm when you moved to the Central West shaped the way that you did your professional life with that experience in sustainability and environmental science? Do you think it influenced how you looked at the world, how you did your job, or maybe how you interacted with people?
Definitely. Look, I think having the background I did have in kind of environmental programs, climate change action, there's not many people like myself, I suppose, living on farms in the region. So it really gave me that unique perspective on, you know, the challenges that farmers are facing, the environment in which they live, and also my background in wanting to see how we can produce more sustainable food and fiber and reduce our impact on the environment. So I believe that having that background and coming to live on a farm, I really identified there was a huge gap in the market in terms of farmers understanding how can renewables help them. And there weren't a lot of examples at the time that I started thinking and working in this area. So it did really, I guess, give me a good foundation of understanding environmental programs, you know, communications, how to really develop my own business, which is what I ended up doing after working for government in the regions. And it's been great opportunities really ever since.
Yeah, I think living in the regions and the opportunities that exist despite the challenges that come with living, I guess, regionally and remotely, I think we love where we live. And obviously, you found that in that part of the world. It's funny when you talked about working on government programs and then living on farm and having that perspective. I guess I can relate to that. I grew up on a farm, but then worked in government and government funded projects and with the government. But then buying our farm 8 years ago, I feel like the perspectives I gained in a similar way add to the way that you're able to do your job, as well as, I guess, bringing that information about what are the opportunities out there around government programs or grants, or like you said, the gap around renewables and that understanding, I guess, for you, it's a really valuable skill set and experiences, I imagine, that you bring and have brought to your role and to the regions. So I guess it sounds like it came from you had this knowledge, but then you came on farm and it's almost like the two collided and that's where the opportunity presented itself. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I was working for the state government based in the Central West around increasing renewable energy generation in New South Wales. And through that program, we had to look at what our region specifically needed. And part of that was looking at solar pumping. So really, how can farmers use solar to replace electricity or diesel and use it for pumping? So that was kind of where I started running a few workshops for landholders. And we got 50 to 60 people at those workshops, which is quite a feat when it comes to farmers attend these workshops run by government. And at the time, there weren't many actual examples of how farms were using solar, really. So we had really people talking in theory about what it could be. And New South Wales, I invited New South Wales farmers who had an energy program at the time to speak, had a couple of businesses there that wanted to do it and saw that there was an opportunity, but not many actual examples. And really, those workshops changed to field days, so to then commercialization of these projects over a number of years. We did have a farmer near us in Narromine who put in a 100 kilowatt solar diesel pump. So we did a field day at his property and got over 100 people. And I joined up with the Landcare group to do that. So it really demonstrated that interest from farmers in, wow, like how are we going to make the most of solar, which had been reducing in cost significantly over the last 8 to 10 years? How can we use that in our operations to start to reduce emissions and particularly costs? And on our farm, I'll just tell you a little bit about that. We were spending $300,000 to pump water over summer to irrigate our cotton crops. And that's a significant input cost, obviously. And, you know, if you look at the energy landscape now and the cost of diesel, you know, that could have been closer to $1 million. So through those workshops and some of the businesses that attended those workshops, my late partner John and his dad, Ross Elder, started to discuss with a business, Reaqua, how do we implement solar with our big bore, which pumped about 15 megs of water a day. How do we start to incorporate solar? How would we change our operations to make the most of that solar? And, you know, what's the payback? What's the return on investment? And it looked like a very strong case. It was about a 5-year payback. for if you put 500 kilowatts of solar on a hectare of land to run the pump during the day with solar and then diesel overnight and to fill our reservoirs, or using that solar a bit longer, starting to pump a bit earlier to fill our reservoirs on the farm for the cotton. So it was about $800,000 as an investment, which is significant. However, with the 5-year payback and the cost of, you know, the volatility in the price of diesel, we felt that was a strong enough business case for us to go ahead, which we did in 2018. So that solar diesel pump, you know, biggest in Australia at the time, we launched it, had Fiona Simpson attend, the president of National Farmers Federation, Noel Blair, the ag minister. Like, it was very exciting, lots of media attention, and the community were interested. And it was seen as a real step change in irrigated agriculture at the time. However, after the first year, which we were still in drought at that time, after the first year, we started experiencing significant problems with the blending of solar and diesel. At that scale, you know, when there was a sun and cloud event, the solar power would drop and it couldn't, and the diesel generator couldn't ramp up quick enough to provide that lost power to run the pump. So the whole system would turn off. So that was one of our issues. The second issue was around blending of the solar and diesel. When there's, you know, in the morning and evenings, the diesel 500 kVA cat generator was being called on to provide or trickle in like a light bulb's worth of power, and that diesel generator needs to be working a lot harder than that, and it caused glazing issues. So we really started to experience massive problems with the solar diesel pump, and unfortunately became this massive R&D project for years. So the payback 5 years came and went, and we've been working with ReAqua closely to try and resolve it. You know, some people said add a battery, some people said do two smaller generators, but really in the end what we found was building a grid connection, which is what we're doing this year, is going to provide reliable, cheaper power with lower emissions. So we'll be able to get rid of that diesel altogether. So that's really been the final outcome of this project.
You're saying all this stuff, and in my head, I've got like 1,000 questions I want to ask about so many parts of this. First of all, I love that you're so open that yes, it wasn't perfect. Yes, there were issues with the blending of the diesel and the solar. However, I think so much of what we do on farming as Australian farmers is having a go, trial and error. We live in an environment where we need to be innovative. We can't sit back and wait. So I love the fact that you've as you said, it's sort of like an ongoing R&D project. 5 years came and went. However, it sounds like you've got a suitable and hopefully successful alternative that's up and running now. And the other part of it that I find really, really important and so crucial to all of these conversations is you talked about what's the payback, what's the ROI, because in so many conversations I know I've had with farmers and researchers and government, and you would be exactly the same, it's around, well, how do we get farmers to adopt low emissions agriculture? And unless it is linked to the bottom line and unless it is linked to productivity and profitability, it is really hard to get adoption at scale. And so obviously from the get-go, you needed it to make sense financially. And I'm assuming like everything you do as you go, that's the same. And is that sort of a key part of the communications and the work that you do when you promote this sort of stuff?
Gosh, 100%. This was a business decision first and foremost, before it was one about reducing emissions. That was a really strong bonus for John and I, that would be reducing 500 tons of CO2 a year if we were able to use the solar as it had been predicted or promised. But it, as you said, it really needs to make sense in a business sense for farmers. Renewables and agriculture conference that I run, I've been very open about transitioning to renewables is not easy. And I, you know, our farm is a case study in that. It's difficult, hence why I run the conference, because it's bringing together farmers that are trying to do these kind of early adopter innovative projects with renewables and getting them to share what some of the challenges have been and what some of the learnings have been. So, and we've been involved in, you know, talking on podcasts and with DPI studies and lots of the media with everything to do with it's not necessarily an easy thing. And that's why we need farmers to be trialing these things and sharing their knowledge so that other people can learn from them. The industry can learn from us as well. So yes, very much agree that it has to make business sense. And as you know, farming can be quite marginal. You have drought years, you have floods. You know, we didn't grow a crop a few years ago because it was too wet, and this year with the fertilizer, and you know, it looks like it's going to be a drought in our region. We might not be growing a winter crop again. So, you know, there's not many farmers that would do it just because of the environmental reasons. But that is a very strong also desire for some people, but it has to also make you money and increase productivity and profitability, which is what renewables generally can do.
Yeah, great. And I think that's it. I think it's about being open-minded, having that business sense to the decisions you make, but let's be open-minded about what the opportunities are. I mean, I remember years ago, the idea of virtual fencing was this concept that didn't exist yet. And now we look at the opportunities that exist across Australia around technologies like that. I think it's so important that we recognize, I guess, that technology is evolving. Someone said to me recently, there's no such thing as business as usual in farming because there are always new opportunities to learn new things. I think renewable agriculture is no different. And I actually think that agriculture is this amazing space where we've got the scope and the permission almost to innovate and to evolve and to do things better. So I love that about that approach that you've taken. I think it's great. It's really great. And obviously, I mean, as you said, you started out years ago doing solar pumping workshops in the Central West. And I mean, getting those sorts of numbers to government events is pretty impressive. And it went from sort of talking about concepts to commercialization and demonstrating them. I'm interested, I mean, obviously you had a background in environmental projects and sustainability and so forth, but how did you and John get to the point of being comfortable enough to trial it on your farm, or even just stepping back a few steps as well, even just running the workshops and getting farmers involved? Who was your support network and how did you learn?
I think that's where it helped, like you mentioned, to have the perspective of living on a farm and having those networks and being in a regional community, but also, you know, working for government and trying to help implement these government projects that are trying to benefit agriculture. So, you know, when I was running those solar pumping workshops, it was all about really understanding where farmers get their information from, where they hear about events, and then trying to tap into the land cares and the local land services, the various grow groups, you know, advertising. It was just really trying to make sure the message was targeted to them, which is, you know, how do you save money through solar pumping? Yeah. And then getting the word out as broadly as you possibly can. So I think being in the regions and having being within that community really helped with trying to get those numbers. And there was obviously a desire as well from farmers wanting to start to cut costs using renewables rather than diesel and electricity. So it really all happened at the right time, I think.
Yeah. And I guess looking back to those times and then today, obviously at the moment, input costs around, let's say, fertilizer and fuel that can't be ignored. Are you noticing a change in the conversation and a shift in farmers? What are you seeing?
100%. So I've had calls from farmers and even calls from businesses or the electricity network just to say, you know, how do we start to put solar on our pumps? How do we grid connect and add solar for various different operations on the farm? So I think there's a real push now to try and reduce our reliance on diesel where possible because of what has happened. And Australia doesn't produce really enough biodiesels or renewable diesel for farmers to use. And I think that's where we need to understand that resilience does cost money. And that's where, you know, the government could invest in these kind of domestic biodiesel refineries to help with that supply chain and make sure we've got security of supply. I've, you know, got farmers that are producing or wanting to produce anhydrous ammonia using renewables as well. And so they'd have a more secure supply of fertilizer for their farms as well. But really the conversation is looking at, you know, what is going to help us be more autonomous as farmers, be more self-reliant and not have to deal with these, you know, extremely expensive supply shocks to things like diesel and fertilizer, because it just shows how vulnerable we are really as a sector when you're relying on these imports all the time, when we could be producing these types of resources ourselves if we had the drive and the right investment and the right intel on how to do that.
Mm. Investment and intel. Yeah, really, really important. And I think for years, we've always had this assumption that Australia is food secure because we can grow so much of our produce. But what these recent events and the unrest in the Middle East has shown us that actually, yes, we can grow food, but we can't actually grow food if we don't have fuel and we don't have fertilizer. And what are the opportunities for us to build that security as a nation to go forward? So I feel like this is a really timely conversation, and I am heading down to your Renewables in Ag conference in Orange in August. So I'm really looking forward to that. And if anyone listening is interested in finding out more, there will be some notes on that link to the podcast today. So yeah, I think there'll be some really interesting outcomes out of that event, Karen, which I imagine is taking up a lot of your time at the moment.
Yes, yeah, it is. But we've got some, like you said, some great speakers. We have, you know, a business as a startup that produces biofuels on farms using oil seeds, because we actually export a lot of our canola seed for other countries to produce biofuels. So we need to be doing that ourselves. You know, we've got a farmer who's an inventor, and he's created a electric combine harvester. So as we electrify our farming sector, will be less reliant on these kind of imported fuels as well, which is a really important part of the story.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to go back as well. A few earlier in our chat, you talked about local land services, which for those not based in New South Wales, is a New South Wales government agency that provides advice and information to farmers around all things ag and natural resource management. And you also talked about land care. How important are those sorts of, and also farming groups, I guess were the three that you mentioned, how important are they in helping you on farm, but I also, I guess, helping the broader community in some of the access to information or adoption of
renewables? Yeah, organisations, I mean, with renewables, I think it's still quite emerging in terms of, you know, how farmers use renewables, as well as the energy transition and farmers understanding enough about their role in that and about insurance and risk and legal and financial aspects of hosting renewable energy infrastructure. But organisations like Landcare and local land services, you know, they do outreach already. They've got those existing relationships and connections. So it's about sometimes educating the educators. And we do get those people come to my conference because they need to understand more about what is happening in the energy landscape and how do they help farmers when they do get questioned about it. And there has been a lack of trust historically with farmers and particularly solar businesses. And I understand why, because generally you get businesses that are really good at solar or renewables, and then you get businesses that are really good at ag, but you don't get the ones that are very good at both. Mm-hmm. And that's who we try and bring together at the expo part of the conference, is those businesses providing solutions to farmers, whether it's bioenergy and anaerobic digestion, or whether it's even, you know, things like there's a company called Plasma Leap who is aiming to produce fertilizer on farm as well. So businesses like that, you know, to talk to farmers about, well, what are they looking for? What would be a good price for producing this type of fertilizer on farm? So, you know, we need land care groups and LLS and grower groups to really help disseminate that information as much as possible, because there can be a lack of trust in other, I guess, solar companies or organizations with farmers. And it's hard to get to farmers sometimes as well. It's hard to get the information out.
Yeah. Look, as a farmer, I'm pretty sure I could go to an event every single day of the week. And I mean, I also work off farm, so that would be even more difficult. But prioritizing what's important is tough for farmers, and that trust piece is so important in being able to access farmers, but also get them to support and attend events. So yeah, no, you've spot on. I'm interested going back when you talked about your grid connection that you've just got up and running on your farm, how long are you sort of expecting that, or how long's it been going, and how much longer do you expect that to, I guess, make those returns? How long do you give it?
Yeah, so we don't have the grid connection yet. It's being built. Apologies. So it's in the middle of kind of the design phase, and our ASP, which is accredited service provider, you know, doing the right studies and connection applications with Essential Energy to get that grid connection built. So these things are not quick processes, and they're very costly as well. But in terms of once we have the grid connection, there should be about a 50% reduction in our costs using solar and electricity rather than diesel. And that's based on last year's diesel prices, not this year. And we should see quite a significant reduction in emissions as well. I think it was about 60%, which is fantastic. And, you know, our solar diesel plant, or solar diesel pump, sorry, was accredited as a power station with the Clean Energy Regulator, which means that we can sell LGCs, which is the large-scale generation certificates, which were part of the renewable energy target. So there was further kind of incentive for us to be able to go to solar and replace diesel, because you can create carbon certificates to sell. So hopefully that will continue once we're grid connected and we can determine what the reduction in emissions have been. But just picking up on a point you said before, you know, with trust, farmers learn from other farmers, and that's, you know, that's why I'm so grateful that you're coming to speak at the conference. And I get a lot of farmers on stage sharing what they've done, because that's where the trust really is between farmers. You know, who have you spoken to? What have you done? What did you learn? What were the challenges?
Yeah. I think within government circles, we like to call it peer-to-peer learning. But in farmer talk, it's just like, what are your neighbours doing? Or what are people in your social circle or within your networks, what are they doing? Because at the end of the day, that's where we see things can work. It's not just a shiny business person coming up and telling us about a great product. It's the doing and the implementing and the learning. I think that's so important in that. I'm really interested to see how your grid connection goes. Is it something that's, let's just say your neighbours look at it and think it looks like a great idea, is it something that other farmers can do, or are you doing it as a bit of a pilot one-off?
Yes. So anybody can build a grid connection. I think one of the biggest barriers at the moment has been the cost. So I think we need about 4 kilometres of new poles and wires, and that's about $600,000. So it is not cheap at all, even with the 2 to 3 year payback. You know, stumping up that type of money isn't easy for most farmers. And in terms of neighbours, you know, if there was another neighbour on the same line that could use that connection, that, you know, we could have shared the cost of that. So it is worth always talking to neighbours to see if they're planning on electrifying pumps or what they might want to be doing in the future. And Essential Energy have a program called the Pilot Program, I think it is, where they can, if somebody uses that grid in the future, because the customer's paying for it, even though it's gifted then to Essential Energy, you get a payment if other customers start to use that new connection that you paid for. So that's another little program that's trying to support, you know, the electrification of ag.
Great. That's really interesting. You sort of think about it, I guess it's like economies of scale, almost being able to work in with neighbours, or just being aware of what everyone's doing and what the opportunities might be. What's next? Like, if you get the grid connection off the ground, and I know obviously the conference keeps you very busy, so it doesn't sound like you're idle at all, but what's next for you? I guess mainly on looking on farm, I guess.
Look, once we have the grid connection in place and we're using the solar as expected, you know, I think it's just a matter of managing the variabilities that come at you in ag, you know, the fertilizer and fuel shortages, the impending potential drought as well. So I think, you know, we want to continue to produce food and fiber as we have been for many years. Yeah, so I guess just using renewables, calculating and managing how much carbon we're saving and understanding that story, and then sharing our learnings, really would be what we'd like to do and what we try and do. You know, we've hosted field days, and students and journalists and lots of different groups onto the farm to try and learn from us about not just the renewables, but even just about groundwater pumping and how that works, how it's managed, how it's audited, particularly during drought. So we'll continue to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't just stop. It keeps going.
Yes.
For you, it's obviously, as you said, the reason you're doing all this is because it was a business case and the low emissions was a nice to have. For farmers who are maybe on the fence or considering what they could do, do you have any advice for them?
I always say to farmers, you know, you need to understand your energy profile, where most of your money is being spent in terms of diesel and electricity, you know, what can be electrified. Talk to others who have done similar things, you know, find out the trustworthy businesses, and then, you know, start to look into how renewables will cut costs because they do in general. And it's a lot easier to measure sometimes in things like soil carbon. You know that you're not spending the same amount on diesel anymore. But I think there's some really great innovations coming up that I really hope might start to take hold in terms of, you know, reducing autonomous tractors that run on solar and batteries that potentially reduce chemical use and use lasers and hot water, I think, to kill weeds. Like, there's some really exciting ag innovations that hopefully will be on the horizon not too long, and that includes hydrogen or electric tractors and, you know, all sorts of biofuels on farm, you know, producing your own biofuels on farms or fertilizers. It's just, yeah, there's a lot happening in the space. So just keep an eye out and, yeah, talk to your peers.
Yeah. In 20 years, what do you hope your farm looks like?
Well, it would be amazing to really be producing as much of our power using renewables and being able to share that power, because having a grid connection means that potentially in the future, when microgrids are a bit easier to implement, we might be able to share and trade that power with others in our region. You know, I'd love to see more of our areas rich in biodiversity. John and I planted quite a lot, over 1,000 or 2,000 seedlings a few years ago, but we didn't have a very high success rate mm-hmm. whatsoever. I think it was less than 10%. Mm. You know, these things aren't easy. The first year, I think I didn't irrigate it enough because they were in drought. The second year, there was a lot of grazing pressure. So a lot of them got nibbled down. And the third year, it was underwater for 3 months. So, you know,
who said farming was hard?
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, but as you've said before, there is massive opportunity as farmers. We have land, we can sequester carbon, we can host renewables. You know, I'd love to see farmers really redefining their roles in regional communities as producers of energy, food and fiber, and, you know, carbon as well. So there's opportunity to diversify in that way, in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been lovely to speak with you, Karen. I've really enjoyed it, and I've learnt a lot. Not only, I guess, about the opportunities, but also that there are definitely challenges and will continue to be with renewables on farm and in agriculture. But I guess it's one of those things, we just keep working at it and trying new things and having a go and talking and being open to learning. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Pip, and thanks for your interest. It's been a great chat.
Thanks.
Podcast episodes are produced by Southern Cross University for general information only. Our guests' views are their own, and any products mentioned reflect their experience, not an endorsement. This isn't professional advice. For your own operation, please seek qualified advice.